Welcome back, everybody, once again to Calibrating Your Compass, a J.J. Taylor leadership podcast talking about our seven leadership competencies. My name is Jeff Weaver. I'm your host. And with me, as always throughout this journey, are Matt and Bob Briggs. Matt, Bob, welcome back once again, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jeff. We're glad to be back.
Hey, morning, Jeff. Good topic today. Looking forward to it.
Me too. In fact, I am ready to dive right into our seventh and final leadership competency, which is achieving results. Sort of the culmination of all of the various things we've been talking about. You know, as we've broken through all these competencies or broken down all these competencies one by one, they're all parts of a larger picture and they're all leading towards something. And, you know, we talk a lot when we talk competencies about the what versus the how and what we do and how we do it. And achieving results is sort of special amongst the competencies, I think, because it is the bridge between those two things, right? The results, as we start any topic around competencies, we always say it's, you know, results alone aren't enough. We have to get them the right way. And that's why competency matters. And that's how we get here. And yet our seventh competency itself is to be able to achieve results. And so I always enjoy getting to sort of bring this to the inevitable conclusion, because I think this competency really speaks to that link between what we do and how we do it and how important it is that even though we have to do it the right way and how we do things mattered, ultimately, how we do it still has to result in getting the results we want. So with that, I'll ask, tell us a little bit about this competency, how it came to be a part of it, and the original intent, and then we'll sort of jump off as we do from there.
Well, as we were developing this competency, Jeff, where our conversation really was around a couple of different things. One, we wanted to create a great culture, a culture where people wanted to be successful, wanted to do the work, were highly engaged. But at the same time, we wanted to be able to achieve results. And so that's really where the what and the how came from. The what, of course, is we have to make our numbers. We have to serve our customers. We have to be very uncompromising when it comes to our goals and objectives. But we want to create a very positive, great place to work environment so that people actually want to do the things that are required. So if you look at the seven competencies, really the first six are all about the how. And you need to learn those competencies so that you can leverage those competencies, you know, not just to make or create a nice environment at J.J. Taylor, but we want to be able to create an environment so that we can execute at a very high level. And we believe the best way to do that is to create a good, positive work environment for our people to be able to do their best work.
Completely agree. And I think, you know, when I talk about this competency, I always like to say the results are inevitable. If you do all this other stuff, if you lead the way you're meant to lead here, the results are going to happen. You know, it's baked into our DNA. We are a results-driven organization, and that's what this competency is meant to speak to. But it's important that we do them by achieving one through six. And if we do one through six consistently, if we are disciplined and intentional in our approach as leaders, the results are going to take place. And it's important to keep that in mind, because when leaders get too focused on results alone, then stop worrying about what they have to do to get there. That's when bad behavior can sneak into place. But when we focus on the behaviors along the way and we get all the steps right, the outcome becomes almost inevitable. And that's what I like about this competency. And what I like about it being at the end of the list is it's sort of the natural result of do all these things right, and you're going to be achieving results. It's what happens to leaders who communicate effectively and manage change and put customers first and all these things that we've been talking about.
And Jeff, yeah, it's way easier to have, if we were to start with this one, you know, because this is heavily about accountability and getting stuff done and all that stuff. If we were to start with that and then people led only that way, by only the numbers, by only hitting the dollar amount or whatever, and then we try to transition back to the how, it's a much harder change. Whereas, like you said, when we're doing one through six progressively and doing those well, the results start to come naturally, and it's much easier to learn some of these blocking and tackling, accountability and achieving results thing this way versus starting with all on the what side and none of the how, and then we've got to break some of the bad behaviors, and we might not have a team behind us, or they're behind us in a cloud of dust. You know, so it's much easier to do it this way, which is kind of the method of the order.
You know, as you look at the responsibilities of a leader, J.J. Taylor, there are only two things that matter. The first one, of course, is good, strong, first choice behavior. It's how we behave. It's modeling our core values. The second is getting stuff done. And Jeff, as you pointed out, you have to do both. One without the other doesn't work. You know, we can be great at our core values, but if we're not achieving results, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. And of course, if all we're focusing on is getting stuff done, then we can create a very, very toxic environment that creates turnover, that creates frustration, that creates confusion. So really, as a J.J. Taylor leader, we have to think about first choice, how we behave, core values. Second thing is getting stuff done.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that once again shows that when it comes to things like this and our mission statement, you know, these lists that we have of how we behave, they're intentionally written. There's a reason this is on the list. There's also a reason that this is 7 and not 1 on the list. And, you know, keep that in mind as a leader, as you look at these things and you absorb these things. It was intentional that we included this. It had to be there because you can't be a successful manager if you're not getting the results the company needs. But at the same time, you also can't be a successful manager if you're getting the results any way except through the other competencies that we've laid out. So to that end, you know, as we talk about results the first choice way, what are some keys to making sure that we can stay results driven, stay results focused, while at the same time not allowing our teams to creep into those bad behaviors and allowing results to take precedent over how we do them?
You know, one of the most important things we have to do as leaders, whether it's J.J. Taylor or anybody else, is we have to create clarity. And that's clarity hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month. And so what does that look like? What do we need to do to maintain clarity on our teams? And this is something that so many leaders don't understand, and it really creates problems. But, you know, we all have jobs that are at times can be overwhelming. We all have long to-do lists each day. And what creates stress and confusion in an organization is that we might have 15 things on our to-do list, but what we find is that most people will look at all 15 of those things as top priority. So what do we do in response? Well, we'll multitask, or we'll decide on the things that are most important to us, which may not necessarily be important to our boss or our bosses. And so two things we need to do as leaders to create clarity. One, we need to be meeting with each one of our direct reports once a week, and the conversation is short and sweet. Two things. One, what are your priorities this week? No more than one, two, or three things. And the second thing is, how can I help you achieve those things? And we need to make sure that our goal is that everybody at J.J. Taylor needs to know what they need to do every day right now. Now, yes, we have goals and objectives. Yes, we have strategies. But the bottom line is, we've got to be able to be able to execute. We've got to be able to give people the clarity of what they need to do right now. You know, one other thought on that last on our last piece, Jeff, is that so many leaders assume that their people know what to do, and so we don't take the time to create clarity. And you know, so many leaders might have a conversation with someone occasionally, maybe never. But the idea is that there has to be crystal clear understanding of what everybody needs to do right now. I can't stress that enough. And the good news about that is that when people are clear on that short list of things to do, they can work way faster under much less stress and be way more effective. It's one of the most important things that leaders need to do.
Absolutely. If we don't know what the most important things are, how do we evaluate all the new stuff that is coming at us constantly as managers? I mean, if your inbox isn't lit up 100 times a day, or if your phone's not ringing a dozen times a day, then I don't know what other company you're working for, but it's not here, because we're all constantly getting, you know, a deluge of new requests, new tasks, new things that we need to get done. And the only way to prioritize them is if we understand the big picture priorities. Because how can I decide if what came across the inbox is more or less important than what I'm doing if I don't know how important what I'm doing is? And that is a huge reason why so many leaders struggle with time management, struggle with task management, is they don't have a good handle on the urgency and priority levels of what they're working on. So everything that comes at them wins by default of being newest, right? It's at the top of the inbox, so it must be the most important thing because it was the latest thing. But that's rarely true. More often than not, the most important things are the things we were already working on, and it's probably in our best interest, in the company's best interest, to take this new task, absorb it, and go, okay, who can I delegate it to, or when can I schedule to get it done? But do I really want to drop what I'm doing to chase the next thing, or is what I'm working on the more important thing? And if you don't know, if you don't have that clarity of what's most important, how in the world can you prioritize the inbound if you don't have it sorted out for what's already on your plate?
You know, that, Jeff, that is so important, because as fast as things move with J.J. Taylor and as fast as things change, I can sit down with one of my direct reports on Monday and we can have great clarity around those top three things. And then I can ask the question, how can I help? And we have a good conversation and we're good to go. But that's not reality, because something is going to happen on Wednesday that's gonna blow up the whole thing. So as a leader, what do I do in a situation like that? Well, you've got to be able to teach your people, if something happens that affects your top three, you have to be able to teach them to say, look, if something happens that is going to prevent you or maybe a barrier from completing what we discussed on Monday, you've got to reprioritize, you've got to come back to me, and we need to have a conversation. So the leader then has the option of saying, or the direct report might say, well, I'm going to do one and two, but I'm going to have to push three back to next week because of this thing that came up. Then the leader has the option of being able to say, yep, that's great, go do that. Or I'll tell you what, I know this happened today, but let's push that one back to next week and let's stay focused on our top three. Or we can delegate that to someone else on the team that might have a little more bandwidth. So it's not just a one and done on your Monday meeting, but it's being able to manage it over the course of the week as things change rapidly, to so that you're maintaining that focus and clarity day by day.
Right. And in reality, what it looks like, Jeff, whatever, you know, leaders on this call, when you're getting work delegated to you or your teams are, usually what happens is you are told it once or it comes across once in an email. So if you have 10 tasks that you all heard about once, it's much harder to prioritize. But if you as a leader are following up frequently with all these tips Bob just gave you, and then going back to your teams and saying, hey, maybe I've told you this 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, it's because it's important. So then that person on your team can go, wow, okay, Jeff talks about this every day, 5 times a day. He must be serious that this is the number one priority. That other thing was only talked about once. So if things come up, I know, okay, I still need to keep my focus on this. And if something rises up to that, I'm going to hear about it more frequently. There's going to be follow-up. I need to follow up as the leader. And emphasize the importance. But if we just send an email one time about a task, if we're harping other things, our people are going to say, well, that's one thing, I'll get to it when I have time. Let me focus on the important stuff. And so that's why, like you said, that clarity is so important. And often that comes with repetition and follow-up.
Matt, that's such an important part. And I think it dovetails perfectly into something that I do think a lot of leaders miss, which is you're going to get what you're inspecting. You're going to get what you're focused on. You're going to get what you follow up on, right? So if this thing is important, but you tell them once and you never follow up on it until, you know, past when it was due, don't expect your team to treat it like it's important versus the stuff you talk about all the time, focus on all the time, et cetera. So as a leader, if I only ever talk about sales numbers, distribution points, tap handles, market share, and MBO stuff, if that's the only thing that ever comes out of my mouth at every single meeting, my team is going to anchor themselves to those things, and that's what they're going to be focused on. If I'm not taking the time to talk about the culture and the how, the customer service, and the exceeding expectations, not just meeting them, if those are not part of the conversation, then I am subtly but definitely training my team that these are the things that I actually focus on because I talk about them all the time and they're the constant bit of my attention versus these things that we say are important, but then we never really talk about them all that much. And that is the difference between what and how when it comes to competency. As leaders, if you're not talking to your team about breaking down silos, communicating well, and serving their customers, they're not going to believe you when you say it's important. You can't just get up one or two times a year and say, hey, remember those competencies? Remember our mission statement? We believe this stuff. Uh-uh. If all you're focused on in the day-to-day is the numbers and the stats, but then every once in a while we throw in a little bit of we believe in our mission and our culture, it doesn't stick. And if we instead are focused all the time, if every conversation, if every meeting, we're using our language and talking about this is because we want to be customer focused. This is because we want to build team success. Then they start to get that message. So I think that's such a key part of what results get achieved, Matt, is it's about what we focus on and where our attention is. And the team will take their cues, not explicitly, but implicitly. Not because you said it's important, but because of how often you talk about it, how often you're focused on it, how often you inspect for results there. That's what they take seriously, not whatever we tell them, not whatever we say, not whatever was on the wall. No, what matters to them is, what am I getting measured on? What am I hearing about all the time?
A great practice that all these leaders listening could implement when you're talking about culture and first choice and core values. Obviously, we're talking about numbers and cases and delivery times and routing efficiency and all these things, right? But if, like you said, if we only talk about that and not the other stuff, where does our focus go? We've got a client up in Louisville, Kentucky. They got 8 locations spread throughout the Midwest, and they kind of transformed their culture a few years ago, similar to J.J. Taylor, just a few years after. And what they started harping on was their equivalent of first choice. And they have, I would argue, it's probably at every level of leadership and team. Each team that meets during their weekly meetings, they spend the first 10 minutes of the meeting reviewing, quote unquote, their first choice culture. They talk about their core values. They talk about their culture. They talk about examples where they hit it out of the park this week and highlight success stories. And they talk about areas where they're missing it. The executive team does that. The executive team of 4, their senior leadership team of 10 does that, all the way down to their parts distribution and service teams at the front line. And so everybody in that organization knows, wow, and it took a few years to get there. But those individual leaders in their team meetings carve out 10 minutes every single meeting to talk about what does first choice look like and how are we hitting it, where are we missing it. So then you think the people at that company know this is also important in addition to efficiency or production numbers? Absolutely. But it was just little changes that individual leaders made that all the leaders started doing with their teams to focus on the what and the how. They talked about it. They followed up on it. So the people said, wow, this is important. I better pay attention to it.
Pat Lencioni, in his book, The Advantage, calls it, I think, the 6 critical questions. And it's pretty close to what you're describing there, Matt. It's, you know, why do we exist? How do we behave? What do we do? How will we succeed? What's most important right now? And who must do what? And he challenges leaders to be able to answer all 6 of those questions and to recite the answers to those questions at the top of every team meeting as a reminder of exactly that. What are the 6 critical, you know, those 6 critical questions, and our answers to them need to stay in the forefront of successful teams who are there to achieve results. And if you can't even answer those questions, you're already behind the 8 ball. So as a leader, that would be my gut check right now is what are we doing? And why do we exist? How do we behave? How are we going to succeed? If I can't answer those, I better find answers to them real quick. Because without that level of clarity, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time, right? So without that level of clarity, how do we know what is important and what we're even aiming at?
You know, all of the stuff that we're talking about really revolves around clarity. I mean, you said it, Jeff. I mean, it's about making sure that everybody in the organization understands what they need to do right now, how they need to behave right now, what are the goals and objectives that I have to achieve. And you know, if we're not good at that, then we'll have an organization that's going to wander all over the place. And it's something that so many leaders don't understand. And it's you know, if there's kind of one thing we could share that is just so important, And that's just making sure that, that people really understand what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to behave. Don't assume it. Make sure that they understand it.
Oh, that's such a key part, Bob. Don't assume it. Never assume that your people know it. Know that they know. Be confident that they know and make sure they can recite back to you. If they don't, you can be just off in wildly different directions so quickly without even realizing it. So that's a great, great point. So when it comes to results and particularly achieving results, I think one of the things that is always on leaders' mind is how do I hold my team accountable for getting those results? So tell us a little bit, of, if you will, gentlemen, about how we build an accountability culture within our teams. And as leaders, what are the things we need to be doing to make sure our teams are being held accountable the first choice way?
You know, in terms of achieving results, kind of accountability is kind of the centerpiece of the whole thing. And I think everybody at least intellectually understands it, but they don't know much about it. And, you know, I've had so many people over the years tell me that, you know, they hold their people accountable. And I've even had some people pound on the desk as they were saying it to me. And then of course, my next question is, well, do you hold people accountable the right way or the wrong way? And typically I'll get deer in the headlights. So really the important thing about accountability is really how do you do that? So many people are not good at it, and it's not because they don't want to be good at it. It's not because they, you know, they want to be, you know, that guy that runs around with a 2x4. But accountability is predominantly a process. It's not about beating people over the head. It's not about getting in somebody's face and yelling and screaming. You know, those are all violations of J.J. Taylor's core values, but it's just basically following a simple process. And, you know, if you follow the process, it takes so much of the stress away from actually holding people accountable, because the idea with following process is that you want to get the monkey off of your back, your responsibility for getting things done, and put it on the back of your team. In other words, put them in a position where they have to decide, am I going to do those things to be successful or not? And it's my choice. And me as the supervisor, all I have to do is lay that out for them and then let them make the decision. You know, if you want to be successful in your role, you're going to have to do the things that I ask you to do. If you don't want to be successful, you don't. So it's their problem, not mine. And by being able to put that monkey on their back, you know, accountability becomes so much less stressful. So how do we do that? What are the right things to do? And there are 10 of them, and we're not going to have time on this podcast to go through all 10 of them, but I'll give you a couple of them that are important. And one of those we've already talked about, surrounding yourself with great people. It is so much easier to hold people accountable when they're good, strong performers. They want to be successful. They have a strong work ethic. They want to learn. You know, being able to hold people like that accountable is so much easier than someone that, you know, doesn't come to work all the time and, you know, somebody that we have to watch to make sure that they do the job. That's got to be step one. Step two is we've got to make sure that we give people everything they need to be successful. And that's the tools, that's the training, that's the, you know, the onboarding, all of the things that are required for someone to be successful in their role. We as leaders have a responsibility to provide those things. We want to be able to set people up for success, not failure. And it's so frustrating for employees to be held accountable for something when they don't have the right process. Whether it be a bad software program or they don't have the equipment that they need. We as leaders need to be able to provide that for them. And then the next thing that's important, and we've been talking about that, you know, quite a bit, you know, in this podcast, we've got to create clarity so that there's no doubt about, you know, what is my job? What's my role? What are the tasks that I'm going to be held accountable for? You know, what am I supposed to do day to day, you know, week to week, so that I know exactly what I have to do right now. And then it's the follow-up and the coaching and the support. It's also being able to, something as simple but so important is just letting people know that you care about them, because what you want to do is you want to create an environment so that they want to do the work. They don't, you don't feel like you have to force them to do the work. So those are just some key things that you have to do to create the right environment so that people understand what they're being held accountable for. And the last thing I would mention is that if there aren't consequences for failure to achieve what you've committed to do, then there is no accountability. And I don't mean by that, when I say consequences, I don't mean that you fire someone necessarily, but it might be, you know, when someone is not able to do what you've tasked them to do, where's the first place you look? Well, the first place you look is in the mirror at yourself. Is there something that I did do or did not do that created this problem? You know, what can I do to make sure that this person has everything they need to be successful? And so you might determine that it's a training problem. You might determine that it's, you know, maybe someone is distracted by some other activity going on, some other project, some other people. But it's a commitment that when somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to do, that there are clear consequences. There must be consequences for not being able to achieve the results that you've committed to. And again, it's not a matter of punishment, but it's a more amount of coaching and support, being able to provide all the resources that they need to set them up for success.
100%. I 100% agree. You know, I always refer back to the book, The Oz Principle, which I think did such a brilliant job laying out this sort of visual mental model, which is if accountability is a line, the minimum we expect from our team is this line of accountability. If they're below the line, you've got to coach them up. And if they're above the line, you've got to take the time to recognize and reward. And really, realistically, nobody lives right on the line. Most team members are somewhere above or below at any given moment. And creating an accountability culture is about creating that mentality in everyone that I have to stay above the line. It's not okay to fall below the line. It's not okay to blame others or wait and see what happens or any other number of excuses, ignore problems, or pretend that they belong to another department. At the end of the day, when there are issues that need to be addressed, I have to own them. I have to do something with them. And anything less is below the line behavior, and that doesn't fly here. And when I know I'm up above the line where I'm supposed to be, I will be recognized. I will be rewarded because that's how my leader is. And as leaders, you build that culture exactly that way. People go below the line, you hold them accountable through coaching, corrective action, accountability, or ultimately termination if necessary. But equally, when people are above the line, you have to reward by recognition and otherwise to say, you did it, you did what was asked, you did it above and beyond, and I'm going to recognize you therefore. And getting that right is what makes a results culture, not just a results habit, but really built into everybody.
As a leader, if you accept marginal and poor performance, it becomes the new normal.
And then you become a poor performer as a result. And, you know, one thing, my last thought on accountability, Jeff, it's kind of become a four-letter word in recent years in business. It's become a bad word. And the reason is because people don't know how to do it and they do it poorly. I mean, number one, it starts with don't ask your people to do anything that you don't do yourself or you're not willing to do yourself. So walk the talk. And then also, if we ask our people to do something or we say we're going to do something, you know, do what we say we're going to do. If I make a commitment to it, I follow through with it. And then accountability is Bob talked about, it's a systematic process. What does systematic process mean? It means it's documented, it's measurable, and it's repeatable. And we live in that environment, our people live in that environment. And the last thing I think a lot of people struggle with accountability is when we ask somebody to do something, say we were perfectly clear, and they don't do it, we usually blame it on, well, they're incompetent or they're crazy or they don't know how to do it. It's the error of attribution, right? So when they don't do something right, it's their fault and they're just crazy. When I don't do something right, it's because the circumstances, or, well, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, so I had to respond this way. And so when it's their problem, I blame their character. When it's my problem, I blame the circumstances. And so with accountability, avoiding the error of attribution is so critical that we have to look in the mirror, we have to walk the talk, we have to be clear on expectations, and we're not calling out someone's character. Obviously, if it's a behavior problem, yes, but if it's a task problem or a process problem, we're highlighting and correcting the process and the skill, not the person and who they are. And so aligning that, which is why we talk about all the behaviors first, how to build trust. If we have a high level of trust, people will know when we're correcting them. It's not that I'm questioning who they are and what they represent. It's I'm questioning the work that has to be done, but I still trust you and have a relationship with you. So long-winded, but those are my final thoughts on accountability.
Well, there's a lot to unpack. It's a single competency out of the list, and yet there's so much packed into it and so much that we have to do to get it right. But that's why I also think it's important to remember that, you know, results are inevitable. If you do the other six the right way, if you are building trust and communicating with your teams in an effective way, if you are leading them through change, if you are keeping them focused on customer needs, if you are developing them and their talent, if you are facilitating the teams to be successful, the results are inevitable. You will get them. It's the summation of all these other factors, but yet it also requires its own attention be paid as well. So keep in mind all these things and keep in mind that what you inspect is what you get, and the results you are focused on are the results your team will provide you. And it's important as leaders that we not allow ourselves to fall in the trap of only inspecting and only caring about task-based results, what they do. We have to look at how they do it as well. If you want people to be competent, you have to pay attention to their competency. And I think that's my final thought on when it comes to achieving results. Make sure you're measuring all the parts, not just what they put on paper and not just the data, but how they got there as well. And that's how you're going to build the culture you want and not just the book of business that you want.
There's a funny story at the end here, Jeff. It's probably on YouTube somewhere, but there's this old video of a city trying to hit, and it relates to drivers and JJ Taylor and delivery. They're trying to hit their route times. So a bus driver has six stops and he's trying to hit his, and he has to be back at the home base by 3 o'clock. And the leader keeps harping on, you got to get here by 3 o'clock. You got to get here by 3 o'clock. So that bus driver goes out the next day and drives 80 miles per hour on his route and opens the door as he's flying by the bus stop, but never stops. And all the people are like, what the heck is going on? And he's flying by. And then he pulls in, you know, 30 minutes early. And he said, I beat my time by 30 minutes. And the leader's just like, great. And he, you know, checks the box. That's not what we're saying, right? It's the how along the way. He hit his time, but he did it horribly, served no customers, and probably endangered some small children along the way. So
all about understanding in totality what you expect and then measuring for that. So great discussion as always. Thank you, gentlemen, both for being here and being a part of it and helping us break these down. We have, I think, achieved the results of this podcast thus far. So nice work on this one. So Bob, Matt, thank you for joining me as always.
Jeff, this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Hope everybody listening learns one or two things. No excuses. This is easy stuff. Haha, just kidding. But if you put some time in and invest in it, you'll get a little bit better as a leader every day and apply some of these principles. So thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure. And thank you all for listening and being a part of it. We've got one more episode coming at you after this that you can check out. But for this one, for achieving results, I think we have put a bow on it. So thank you for joining us as we calibrate your compass here as part of our ongoing Brew University Leadership Podcast series. I've been your host, Jeff Weaver, and we'll see you next time.